There are a lot of podcasts out there, but how many of them are actually worth the time? Or maybe you feel you don't have anything in common with the host. Well, there's a podcast you should try. It's called Sergeant Dino's True Talk Podcast. True Talk on topics you'll find not only interesting, but important to you. Plus, a lot of people feel that Sergeant Dino's voice is one they can count on to be their trustworthy friend. Check it out yourself. Live from Austin, Texas, Sergeant Dino's True Talk Podcast. You'll find him everywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Instagram. That's Sergeant Dino's True Talk Podcast. Listen, learn, and build a better you.
Welcome, everybody, to Sergeant Dino's True Talk. Today, I'm very excited. It's a little bit early morning here. Not too early for both me and Klaus, as we're probably used to waking up pretty early. I have very little words to even describe. I'm a big fanboy. I've been watching his story and what he went through during one of his sagas as the crucifixion. It was pretty amazing stuff, and I wanted to do this episode to kind of give back to not only my community but also to his, just because of his story and just sharing it along. So honestly, it's a privilege and an honor for me to introduce a fighter. A lot of people know him as the Black Viking. Honestly, total humbleness and an honor to talk to this gentleman. So thank you again for your time, Klaus, and please introduce yourself to the Sergeant Dino's True Talk community.
My name is Klaus Johannes. I'm originally from East Africa, Eritrea, Ethiopia, that side of the country. I was born in Naples, Italy, but I've been living for the past 30 odd years in the UK. I would say I founded the Black Vikings London movement about close to a decade ago, maybe a little bit longer, but it's changed names many times. Then the sagas really started about 4 years ago, something like that, and I've been pursuing it since then. And that's just to keep it. If I go deeper, it's just going to go
into a rabbit hole. I got it. Yeah. So just for those who don't know too much of your story, I would love for you to explain just your concept of your sagas. And I think really your vision of community is something that a lot of people need to hear nowadays. And I want to get into the survival aspect as well, because I know you did the Lone Saga, and I know you don't know much about me, but I'm an ex-military guy, so I'm very common to be out in the in the sticks, and that's kind of my happy place. So I think we also have that connection. So it's like, I love your cinematography and your photos, your poetry. It's like, it reminds me of those old 80s documentaries, and I just love it. I love it, man. Let's talk a little bit about maybe the creation of Thorhall, and then just your experience in crucifixion. And for those who don't know, for the crucifixion, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Klaus, you were trying to just kind of do an ode. First, you started off with sandbags, correct? And you were running, you did it like two or three times. Explain your journey.
The thing is, because sometimes, people look at the sagas and think, oh, this is just a crazy guy doing crazy shit to get noticed on Instagram. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, the real reason why the sagas even began, seven sagas, were essentially I was in a pit of depression for a very long time of my life. As I argued, probably about 3 years. I'm talking, lights off in my place, never leaving the house, really dark place. And then one day I decided that wasn't a way to live. And I basically wrote down everything I perceived to be a weakness within my being. And once I jotted them all down, and I thought, okay, and by then I'd already established the Black Vikings movement. So I thought, almost like the trials of, I think it was Hercules, where you have to conquer each feat. And I thought, but rather than just have a challenge where it concludes in like a year, or I can do them all in a set time, what if I actually made these challenges so big, so huge, that it would actually consume my life, my whole life? Not just a period of time, not an extended period of time. Literally, I could live to be 90 and might not finish them. And that isn't the point. The point isn't to finish them, but it's to embark on that journey of actually trying out things that are uncomfortable to me, that I really didn't feel I was confident in, and to do them alone, not to have that kind of support structure. And so that's how really how they began. And each, and I've devised 7 sagas. Each saga has 3 attempts, because the one thing I found out is through the cold bath exposures that I do, that I did for 5 years now, is that whenever I stepped into a cold bath, I instinctively, I wouldn't just dive in. I would always like put my foot in first and I kind of splashed the water myself. So I realized that instinctively, I'm a cautious person. So meaning that on my first attempt on a saga, I would never give everything I have. I would always hold back a little bit. And instinctively, I would say, you know, looking at it, I would say, oh, I did the best I could, but I could always give more. So I thought, okay. So every saga will have 3 attempts and each one would aim to outdo the previous attempt. So with the Death March, which is the first of the 7 sagas, it began with a 40 kilo sandbag. And that was quite easy, you know? So I came back home and I was like, okay. So the next time I did it with 60 kilo sandbag. And obviously that's a lot harder. I mean, I don't know if you've dealt with sandbags, but your fingers
yes,
and your
I
hands.
Have.
I mean, that's really what, and they started cramping up. So, but I did it. It was hard, but I'm not gonna lie. It was very hard, but I did it. And then I realized that it's still, I could still give a little bit more. And so the third attempt was the crucifixion. I moved away from sandbags and I decided to carry a, it happened during Easter. So the idea was I started thinking about the ultimate death march, you know, which would be Jesus Christ walking the Via Dolorosa, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, what about carrying an actual, a cruiser, a cross, you know? Mm-hmm. So obviously I couldn't get a cross, but I found a railway sleeper mm-hmm. that weighed about 60 kilos and I put that on my back and I carried it to central London barefoot, bare chested for about 9 hours and 46 minutes. Mm-hmm. And through the journey, basically, I basically fractured the back of my neck. I, 2 of my discs pushed into my spinal cord and a nerve was impinged. So basically I lost movement and sensation in my hands. That happened pretty much about 1.5 hours into it. So I lost movement in my arms and sensation, but I carried on for another 8 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then
I just like to stop you there, because that reflection, I can remember, you know, the mm-hmm. one part that kind of gave me chills was when I saw you bumping your shoulders, you know, you're bumping yeah. your shoulders, like trying
I
to get
that. I know.
And so I felt the same thing. Like I remember holding weight, and one of the yeah. worst obstacle courses I did
yeah.
was actually that same position. And I was just yeah. struggling. And then yeah. when I saw you doing that, I'm like, I already felt yeah. you brought back everything. I was like, oh Lord, I just would like to let people know the amount of grit and tenacity you had in that mm-hmm. video. And to know that you actually had crushed your vertebrae and still completed it is just,
I mean,
just
in all
amazing,
fairness,
man.
Like, in all fairness, it wasn't until probably I was about 6 hours into it, then I thought, okay, this is not like, you know, it's not like when you get like a dead leg or a dead arm. Instinctively, I thought it was that. About halfway through, I realized this isn't it, because every time that my hands were dropping down, it felt like they were being ripped out of their sockets and I was screaming. You know, and then I realized it's like, okay, this is actually quite bad. But by then, my reasoning was whatever damage is done anyway. Mm-hmm. And you've already gone halfway now. So I was like, if I quit now, one, I face the death of not having completed it. And then I still have to deal with this injury. So I was like, well, I might as well finish it. Then I can deal with the injury, but at least I can rest well knowing that I did it. You know, I didn't quit.
Yeah,
and I mean, it made sense in my head at the time.
It still makes sense, man. It's just amazing just how you push through there. I mean, I've been through a couple of moments where I question myself, like, damn, am I gonna complete it? You know, no, I am gonna do it. I'm gonna be a little screwed up when I get there. Also, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I know you don't like calling it poetry, but your meditations and kind of, you know, how you've been able to manifest those in your, you know, kind of view of community. in that aspect, because I like the way you think about society as a whole. Like, hey, I need to become more independent. I need to learn these things on myself, so I don't have to depend on the system. And I really appreciate that those teachings that I know you're passing on through Black Viking. So I appreciate that as well.
I mean, I've been writing for a long time. You know, poetry, also like spoken word and stuff like that. But I've been passionate about, you know, like nature. You know, and be self-sufficient and skilled. You know, when I say, you know, like when it's funny, I always say like people consider, you know, gold and silver assets, you know, but gold and silver are not assets. Gold and silver are precious metals. That's what metals that some people believe are precious. Real assets are skills. What can you do? That's a skill that does not require anybody to consider them valuable. They're valuable in itself. Whereas gold, I could have an ounce of gold. If everybody decides tomorrow it ain't worth shit, it ain't worth shit. You know, I can't do anything with it. But if I can, if I know how to hunt, how to track, how to build my own, how to build my own fortitude in a forest with nothing but a knife, does it matter that the world doesn't think it's valuable? It still has value. It has value because it is concrete evidence of its value. So essentially, that's I've been passionate basically about relearning those skills which have been denied to us, you know, from for a very long time. I mean, my parents don't have those skills, you know, their parents. God knows how far back you would have to go to find out people that actually had those skills. And I have friends that travel a lot, and they've been to Africa, and they went and stayed with the pygmies in the Congo. And these pygmies were telling them that within 20 years, they expect that the tribe would be done. Because basically, already the young boys are venturing into the cities. So that part of our history is fading away. Those skills are fading away. The tribes, you'll be hard-pressed to find a tribe that is out there that hasn't been touched. It's the tentacles of the system have reached everywhere. And yes, to the point... That I mean, the only real skill, if we want to see anything like that, you'd have to look at a documentary, you know, and that's it. That's the only, so I feel it's almost like it's up to us, you know, to relearn those skills. Because when we talk about independence, that's the only true independence is that, you know, I mean, and so that's essentially what I've been wanting to do. It's hard because you have to juggle life within the system, you know, and getting and playing the paper game, you know, chasing money and stuff, and at the same time do the sagas at the same time, you know. So it's hard to juggle everything, but I try in the best I can, you know?
I know you try in an amazing way, man, because I know you're making some changes in that community, in that area. I know that doesn't seem like much, but when I see those two or three people behind you in those videos, that tells me, hey, this guy, I miss that rawness, that early morning rawness, you know. Also, I know you just recently came out of the carabiner accident training video as well. But as far as cold immersion, since you've been doing it this long, because I just, I'm kind of new to the cold immersion. I've been doing it for maybe 6 months. And I noticed that it's, I got to wean myself into it. I'm not a cold guy. I'm a tropical guy. So I like to be cool and not hot. So I learned that the hard way when I went to Afghanistan, so I definitely understand the pit of real heat, you know, the pit of real heat. And I commend you for everything you're doing, man. I really enjoy it. So yeah, I guess as far as survival situation, when you're doing these lone sagas, is there anything you think of that you can for sure go, hey, I can't leave without these three items, four items? Because I know you've built also in a kind of different terrain, because you did it in Scotland, correct? If I'm not. Yeah. And so by you going up there, was the terrain much different from where you're at in the UK?
Very. I mean, it went so far. I've done so if there's three attempts to every saga, the long saga so far, I've done two attempts. The first attempt was 5 days with no food, and that was done in, God, what was it, around December. So when I went up, when I went there in Scotland, it was snow everywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with, it was cold, and although I'm okay with the cold, since the injury to my neck, like my right hand is not, it's not the same anymore. So it's, the movement is okay, but in the cold, it becomes almost useless. I don't have the dexterity.
I got
and,
you.
Yeah, and then the worst, it feels almost like if my hand was inside like four pair of gloves. So I don't have the movement in the cold. And also it just gets very, very cold, you know, like the same, I mean, you can literally feel it and feel it's ice cold. So it was hard in the sense that I had to do everything with this hand covered up. And I was using my left hand to try and pitch up a tent. And we're talking like gale force winds, snow, and it was hard, and I'm there alone.
You know? Yeah. So
it was tricky. And it's very different climate to London, where I'm, you know, I mean, London is down below the south, the UK. It's quite, you know, it's not very high. It's like at sea level, pretty much. And you go to Scotland, and obviously it's the highlands, so it's a lot colder.
Gotcha. So any advice to maybe people that are going to be going to that area specifically to be trekking, anything that they need to possibly take with them?
The best advice I learned from the first one I went, I was prepared badly. So I didn't have the right boots, the right socks, I mean, everything. So basically my feet go wet. Once your feet are wet in that kind of climate, they're basically, they're going to stay wet the whole time. So the best thing I did, I invested in some really good boots and some really good socks. And I would say at the very least, make sure you can keep your feet dry and get a good sleeping bag, you know, because once you're cold, once you're wet, it's very hard to get dry and warm again. You know, like that's pretty much will be used, especially in that kind of climate where it's always raining.
Yeah, I think the coldest day I ever had to do was in Korea, where pretty much I was in a two-man tent out in the, no. We had to chip ice and put them in cans, and that's how we got water.
Yeah.
We ended up having to melt everything because everything was frozen.
Everything. Yeah, I can imagine. I remember when I went the first one to Scotland, I'd come out of hospital. I've come out 4 months prior. So I'd come out of hospital, and within 4 months, I was climbing this mountain in Scotland. And I wasn't going to be the best, you know, but.
And that's what I'm saying. What is it that you get into? Like, I guess that's part of the discomfort zone, that suffering, because that's where I kind of find it too. It's like, once you find that suffering and then you kind of push it through, or what is it that motivates to get you to the suffering, if that makes sense?
I mean, you know, like, obviously I said, you know, like there's people that live their life with, and their focus is like amassing as much wealth as they can. You know, others are like, you know what, I'm going to just have fun, enjoy myself and live life like that. Other people will base it around their family, and they're all, you know, equally, you know, I can't argue with us endeavors and motives. Everybody should have this. Now, the thing is with me, I found out very early on in my life that I couldn't have children. So obviously in the back of my mind, I always knew that was never going to be an option for me. So also I like money for things that it can get me, but I'm not really a consumerist. I don't really need to have that many possessions. I'm quite simple. So I realized that I needed, with creating the saga, I was essentially manufacturing a meaning, a rudder, you know, something. Because otherwise you go through life aimless. You know, everybody needs something. So this was meant to be a rudder, and through the struggle of it, to realize that I'm capable of much more than I've been led to believe. And when I say this, from when I was young, from when I was a little boy, I expected little for myself, or expected very little, because many people didn't think much of me. So I had to, and I accepted it for a long time. And it's only through, you know what? No, I decide what I'm going to be. And I decide that by my every actions that I take every day. And it doesn't need to be just climbing a mountain. It can be down to the simplest, to the simple decision that you make, you know? And so that's what I've been doing.
Awesome, man. I mean, so powerful. So that's why I think your story is so important. It's just because of the power, the rawness of it, and being the situation that you grew up in Napoli, you know what I mean, in Italy, and then coming up through there. I know that was a struggle, so I commend you. That's all I wanted to talk about, is just genuinely getting to know you and bringing your story to light. I really appreciate your time, and whatever else you would feel like you can add, or is there anything that you're trying to do as far as new projects or anything you're trying to promote right now?
Well, at the moment is, so basically, as I said, the 7 sagas, not all of them are completed. And I jump between different sagas depending on what's happening in the world, how much money I have around me. So for example, this year I was meant to actually carry on with the Safa saga, which is basically amassing 10,000 hours of suffering for the benefit of others. So far I've amassed, I think it's about 200 odd hours. When I walked from London to Dartmoor National Park, there's about 211 miles walking. So the next one was meant to be from the West Penzance, which is in the west coast of the UK, just at the bottom of the west. And it was meant to be from there to the Isle of Wight and then to the very top of Scotland. So that would have been 1,000 miles of walking. But obviously, just as we were getting prepared, you know, meaning I was going to raise money for a children's charity, and then COVID kicked in and the lockdowns and all sorts. So I had to make a quick decision. And I postponed that, and now I'm pursuing the 7th saga, which is basically to box 100 consecutive rounds. So I have no experience with boxing. I mean, I've done wrestling in the past, but no boxing.
I tell you, that check left hook you were throwing at that bag that says otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, obviously what I know is just from fighting, you know, in the streets and stuff. But so with the idea is basically, for next year, to try and line up some white collar fights for experience, so if I can get 2 or 3, and then depending on how those goes, maybe try and have as many as I can before I have the one attempt at it. So it'll be 100 rounds with various opponents. But I mean, I'm 43 now, so I mean, I'll have to do it soon, because you know, obviously, as you get older, it's gonna get harder and harder.
Yeah, I don't want Klaus getting hit. Hopefully you just doing the hitting.
Well, I think 100 rounds, I think I'll have to accept some punches, you know?
Take some body shots. Yeah, I'll take a body shot.
Attempt the head,
yeah. But man, I have definitely seen you box, and I think you have. I know you were saying you were having some issues though with your...
Yes, the shoulder basically, yeah, it's all from the neck injury. But I saw a physio yesterday, so I've got some routines I'm doing. I'm going to do some cupping on the shoulder as well, courtesy of the club where most of my friends are, Legion Wrestling. I'm going to get some cupping done with them. And then, yeah, just prep, you know, like drill, 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 repetition, keep doing it. Just put your head down and just do the work. You know, eventually something has to happen.
Definitely. You'll get better. Definitely, man. And once again, I'm so honored and humbled. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in to this week's episode of Sorrentino's True Talk with Klaus Johannes, also known as the Black Viking. I'd like to personally also thank each and every one of you that have been able to contribute to the podcast, which is currently sitting around 600 downloads and just about to hit 5,000 views on YouTube. So we are definitely moving on along. This week, personally, I would also like to thank a New York City Podcast Network. They did an amazing job on a commercial I posted out. So we're starting to establish a relationship with other podcasters as well. People just stay in the loop, know that newer content is coming out, and it's definitely going to be an exciting year as we're continuing to grind in 2021, ahead of schedule with more episodes than what we initially intended, but we will continue to go as planned and keep sharing amazing stories and amazing content.